As a child, I was abused emotionally, physically, mentally, and sexually. By seventh grade, I tried to commit suicide. You know, I had to go to the hospital, and then I went into a rehab center. And then once I got out, I went back home, and the abuse continued. So I just left. I was 13, and I left. I slept outside of that first night. In my mind, I always thought I was worthless, because my mom always said that, you know, my stepdad always said that was engraved in me. I never thought I could do anything else. It's not what happens to you that matters. It's how you choose to deal with what happens to you that matters. Because stuff's going to happen no matter what. It might not be in the same form like what I went through.
I'm Joe C. Mandel, and this is Raven Conversations. And today I'm joined by Captain Paula Ramirez. She is with the Seaburn Task Force, but she's also the first M-Day commander of a recruiting or retention company in the Washington Army National Guard. So that's kind of cool. And she's got a fantastic guard background, great story, tons of lineage in the military. We were just talking about how her daughter is now in the guard. That's a fantastic thing. So, Paul, appreciate you joining us. Intro on yourself, because I think we're going to go background later, but intro on yourself.
All right, thank you for having me here. I have three children, and like you said, my daughter just enlisted as well into the guard. Currently, full-time, I work for the Seaburn Task Force as the logistics OIC, and that's under the Homeland Response Force. And I'm also the M-Day commander for Alpha Company and Recruiting and Retention Battalion.
So how did you learn about the Guard?
So actually, I was in the Army Reserve for 2 years, 2007 to 2009. My daughter, my firstborn, had medical issues, so I had to get out. And then fast forward to 2016, 2017, I was working at a high school, and the recruiter there asked me, because I was working with seniors, asked me if I'd be interested. And I told her, well, I wasn't for 2 years, but didn't really count. It'd be nice to like finish what I started, but I'll think about it. And then the next time I saw her, she asked me again if I was interested, that it would fit my skills and knowledge. And I said, I think I'll do it if you do it with me. And she thought about it. And the next month, she's like, all right, let's do OCS together. And here we are, both serving.
I love that. Mm-hmm. I love that. Who is the recruiter?
Staff Sergeant Mann, but now she's Captain Mann.
Hey, look at that.
Mm-hmm.
Perfect. And what's funny is I know she's an intel officer.
Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. She's been in the 341st with me.
She's number amazing.
Yes. Real quick question before we go into your background. How did you end up as the first M-Day commander for recruiting or retention? Because that's primarily always been a full-time officer's job. How did you get it as an M-Day person who's not been in recruiting before?
So originally I was looking to do command time in 420th, and I had asked about it. I had just became a captain, so I asked about it, and they said they were actually looking for seasoned captains, so captains that hadn't done their command time. So I was like, okay, well, I'll look for something else. Then I got an email forwarded to me that they were looking, recruiting and retention was looking for three company commanders for RSP. So I applied for that, and I got it. But what they were looking into is to have the soldiers and the recruits actually see what an actual company would look like, to include the commander and the first sergeant. So that's how that started.
Yeah. And so where is your company located at?
So it's Area 1 and Area 5, so Spokane, Tri-Cities, Yakima area.
And what is like a typical drill for an M-Day company commander RRB look like?
So it's really awesome. Pretty much the guys do everything. So like in between drills, I help them and go to events, help them with recruiting events. But during drill weekends, there's a lot of new recruits. So we get like 50 plus. And those that are already in, a lot of high school students as well. So they're doing just basic 10-level skills, learning all that. And I go around and talk to them as well. I love talking to kids. I mean, that's what I did at a high school as well.
Yeah.
And assist them with all of that. And also I help them with letters of recommendation. So I tell them, use this, use all the resources. There's so much out there. And I wish I had that when I was growing up, and I did not. So I'm doing a lot of letter recommendations as well to help them with, you know, getting a job or whatever they need, and assisting that way.
Yeah. So this is, and I appreciate you saying you love to talk to kids, because this is where I think I actually originally met you, and the idea of having you on the podcast started was during Veterans Day. Your name was floated as, hey, we want to make sure she's able to go do her job and talk to kids, because that's
yes.
part of your job as the recruiting or retention commander is talking to kids. So, And you always share your background with them when you go to these events.
Yes.
So now I'm going to ask, share your background with us, because the intro and background are two different questions in this
yes.
one. So please, please go ahead. And I said, there'll probably be more questions that come, but we'd love if you would share kind of your story.
All right. So I'll start from the beginning. As a child, I was abused emotionally, physically, mentally, and sexually. By seventh grade, I tried to commit suicide. Unfortunately, one of my friends caught me. You know, I had to go to hospital, and then I went into a rehab center. And then once I got out, I went back home, and the abuse continued. So I just left. I was 13, and I left. I slept outside of that first night, got on the bus, I think just because it was habit, went back to school. And then I asked my friends, can I live with you guys? I have nowhere to go. And fortunately, their parents didn't call CPS. They allowed me to live with them. But I would only stay like 3 months and then go to the next house. Only because I was aware of what a man could do, and I just didn't want to go there. And the parents loved me because I would cook, clean. I mean, I didn't have an option. So I did what I could, moved around, lived with different families. In high school, there was a program where if you were failing, they would hook you up with a job because maybe that can show you some leadership and some responsibility. So I went in there and I asked, well, you know, can I get a job? And she's like, well, that's not how it works. We know what classes are you failing? And I said, well, I'm not failing any classes. I'm a straight A student. And she said, I'm sorry, this is for failing kids. And I said, what about kids that are doing good? What do you have for us? She's like, I'm sorry, this is just how it works. So then I told her my, you know, like I don't even have money to buy basic items like deodorant. So she kind of lied on there, and I got a job, and I started that way, got myself through high school, through college. Took me 7 years to get my bachelor's degree because I had two children. And then I also did Army Reserve for 2 years and then got out because of my daughter. And then I got here. What really got me into healing all of that was actually through officer candidate school. I don't know about everyone else, but it was so difficult for me. It was worse than boot camp. And I found myself crying right after, drill. I was like, why am I crying? No one else is crying. Why am I crying? You know, and it was in the barracks, not in front of everyone. And so then I started thinking, oh, wow, the cadre reminds me of my stepdad. I thought I healed all of this, but healing doesn't mean you just ignore it and leave it under the rug, right? It's going to come up one way or another. So then I started Googling things, how to heal myself, right? Journaling and all these things. So I never went to a counselor. I just Googled it, and that's how I started healing. So I think that also brought a lot of awareness, and I was able to see a lot of cues and a lot of behavioral aspects in other soldiers because of that. So the military, funny, is what got me into spirituality.
Yeah. Well, that's, like I said, your story is phenomenal. A couple of questions I have. So you brought up OCS as kind of the thing that started that healing process. Mm-hmm. What was it like about going through that? And then what, and obviously commissioning is a massive, you know, milestone in life. I remember my commissioning day. I remember every time you get promoted as an officer. It had to have been the same for you as like an emotional event. But what was that thing that just emotionally like hit you every time through OCS?
I think a lot of the way we act, right, in our outer world is based off of our inner world. So if our programming is a certain way, then you're always going to believe that no matter what, unless you start to rewire the way you think. So in my mind, I always thought I was worthless because my mom always said that. You know, my stepdad always said that was engraved in me. I never thought I could do anything else. So when I was actually, like, everything that we were doing at OCS was really intense, and I kept telling myself, I can't do it. I can't do it. I can't do it. And then I was like, wait a minute. That's just a program. Why do I even believe that? Right. And that was part of the healing journey as well. Like, how do I release this? How do I forgive them? How do I forgive myself? Because it's just an experience. Right. Good or bad. It's just an experience. Yeah. There's going to be experiences that you want to have that are better. Right. More positive. But it still made me who I am today. So even there's even beauty in the darkness, right? Seeds grow in darkness. I don't think if I would have had a life like that, I wouldn't be who I am today. And it happens to a lot more people than we know. Just no one talks about it. Maybe because they haven't healed through that, or it brings up a lot of emotions. But I think realizing when I knew who I was not, I knew who I was. So having that contrast allowed me to actually discover my worth and know that I was worthy of doing everything else that everyone was there to do as well.
Yeah, and you already had your kids when you commissioned. What was that emotional feeling like for you pinning on a second lieutenant rank and your family seeing this happen?
Well, I'm the first one to be an officer in my family. But for my kids, it was like, if I could do this, you can do this too. If I could do this with limited resources, imagine what you can do with all the resources you have. So it's setting the example. I would never tell them to do anything that I haven't done.
Yeah.
So I want to be that example, right? You want to break the generational trauma, you know, and give that generational wealth, right? And wealth doesn't mean finances. It's everything else. So, and I think that's why it was so hard for me, because I was breaking that generational trauma in my family. And once you break it, then it becomes easier for your lineage as well.
Yeah, that is an incredible way of saying it. And I 100% believe that when you have that happen generationally, there has to be a breaking point where, mm-hmm. no, this is the line and this is where it breaks. And I applause on you for doing that, because that is massive.
Thank you.
So you brought up the healing journey as well, and journaling. I think is a massive part. And I think we all have a different way of not just healing, but venting and getting it out there. I know for me, it's just talking it through. It's being physical, doing something mm-hmm. that's physical. I garden a lot, to be honest. I enjoy gardening. To your point, yeah, seeds grow in the darkness. Mm-hmm. They also grow in the dirt, where I think we tend to forget that, mm-hmm. you know, the life has to come from something. What was it about journaling for you? And we'll get into some other healing things that you're also doing, but what was it about journaling for you?
When you sit down and actually write everything, you actually see things that you wouldn't before, because you start writing it out and you're like, oh, I didn't realize that. So like one of the things of journaling was my siblings, because that was like the highlight of my life was my siblings. And there's a lot of us. So I realized that I wouldn't be me without them, because they are I am. And I think that's what kept me afloat, and for all of us, for each other. So journaling definitely helped me see things that I would not see if I was just talking out loud.
Yeah. Yeah. So now on the flip side, the other part of it, and I mentioned the first time I was like, hey, this person would be great on the podcast. And then we started talking about sound therapy, and it's something now you are doing. Mm-hmm. We can go in as depth as you want, or a little, because I know we're also going to do a story on it. Talk about sound therapy and how you're using that to heal soldiers.
So sound therapy originally started actually because one of my soldiers, was not my soldier, but a soldier that I work with, was coming out of deployment, had a lot of suicidal ideation, going through a divorce at the same time. So we got a call from his wife that he was going to go through it, and she didn't know where he was at. So we called the cops. The cops were able to ping him, got a hold of him before he did it. And then there was a debate whether he should come to work or not. And fortunately, he was able to come back to work. And when I first saw him, I was like, wow, I've never seen anyone's physiology change. He typically has blue eyes, but when he came into the office, he was sunken and his eyes were dark. And it really scared me. So I quickly got online and researched how I could help the soldier now and not 4 years from now, not having to wait X amount of time to get a certification. So I came upon sound and how the vibrations help you release stagnant energies. And it just helps promote peaceness all around. So I was like, okay, well, I don't have all those instruments, but I do have a drum. And then I just thought, maybe if I drum his body, that'll release some of the energies. So, you know, no side effects, let's try it. So I asked him, I'll say, hey, how would you feel about doing this? He's like, I don't care, do whatever you want. So I started drumming him just over his body, 45 minutes, twice a week. Then it was every week, then every other week to once a month. And he just progressively got better. And he said that was the most peace he had ever witnessed. And this is an MIE-7. So this stuff was like, you know, but he didn't care at the time. So he's open to it. Then everyone else at the YRC caught wind of it and asked, well, can I try it? Can I try it? So my arm was getting tired of drumming everyone. So I looked up what I could get to get more people at the same time. And that's where I got all these other instruments, crystal bowls, chimes, Tibetan bowls, And now I have a big powwow drum that I use as well. So that's how I started. And sound therapy is, it's like a nervous system reset. So your body goes from flight to fight to recovery mode. So it just gives you that time to rest because we're always on the go, go, go. But we never stop to actually just relax and be. And so now almost the entire building comes down to the sessions.
Yeah, you don't have a background in any of this, right?
No.
Degree wasn't in anything about healing or holistic medicine.
Nope.
It's just fascinating. You just Googled it and figured it all out. And
well, he
just
needed
digging
the
it,
help so. Now. You know, for someone who's serving their country, who goes on deployment, you know, and it's having issues all around, like we need to help them now, not wait until something is being done. And I know there's other things that are being done, but like there had to have been something more. So this was just an added tool to whatever he was doing.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, and yours was journaling. And you kind of already brought up your siblings. So you have six siblings.
Yes.
All serve in the military.
Yes.
Different branches, mm-hmm. kind of spread out, active, guard, reserve.
Yes.
Niece serves. And now your daughter serves.
Yes.
In the Washington Guard.
Yes.
When did your daughter join?
Oh, she just joined, last year. It was last year right out of high school. She's finishing up her AA. She finishes this quarter. So after that, she'll be going to BCT. But she's already drilling with her unit, so it's pretty awesome.
And what is she going to do?
For school, she wants to be a film director. So she's going to
So she's
going to
be public affairs.
Probably. She actually already got a job offer from, so she's with the Air Force National Guard.
Okay.
I was like, she hasn't even done BCT yet, but I wanted her to be here, of course, but because I know all the systems, I know everyone, I don't know anything Air Force.
So she decided to go air instead of
Army. She's like, I don't want to work with you. I already live with you. So, yeah, but my other sister convinced her too, because my sister was in the Air Force, but she was active duty Air Force.
We tried, but there's always a home to come over to the 122nd.
So I'm happy, yeah. So she's doing that. She's doing personnel. So I think like S1, you know, in our books. And then for my siblings, so six of us, including myself. And I think I researched that's like the largest family to join voluntarily without being drafted. And then my niece also drills with my sister in the California Guard.
Nice. What was it about all of you who just said, hey, we're all going to just end up joining the service eventually or just doing it? Was it kind of the background you already talked about?
Yeah, I think we just wanted to get out of what our situation. I mean, we didn't really know. Like, we just, like, for me, I was like, okay, if I go to school, like, this is going to be a way out. If I do this, this is going to be a way out. I didn't know what I was doing. I didn't have any guidance. We didn't have any guidance, like, from anyone. So it was kind of just hit and miss, like, you can't go wrong. I see it like autocorrect when you're typing and you misspell a word, but then it autocorrects it for you. So that's how I saw life. If you're doing these things, you're bound to do something right. Something's going to come from this. So I think for us, it was just doing something with our lives and doing something different. And so like my sister always says, yeah, like BCT was easy because I was used to getting yelled at. At least I was getting free food and, you know, all that because I mentioned I was homeless, like I was living in different places. Sometimes I didn't even have food to eat. So I would eat out of the garbage cans. I didn't have anything else. But it was a good experience because now I can relate to people that have gone through that. Like it's no longer sympathy, right? Now it's empathy because empathy is when you're in the foxhole with them, right? Sympathy is when you're looking down in the foxhole and say, oh, I'm sorry. You know, you really don't know unless you've gone through it yourself.
Yeah. Yeah, that is 100% true. And you were enlisted prior to being an officer as well.
Yes.
Same with myself. I always say I think some of the best officers always were enlisted prior and they started as an E1 because they have that empathy for, hey, this sucks, you know, in the foxhole with your colleagues. But that's where you grow those, like,
yes,
that strength, and you kind of bring it up. And then when you're at this point in your career, you can be like, I can always go back and remember what it felt like here. To say I'm never going to let my soldiers or anybody who serves for me do something that I wouldn't have already done myself. So,
right.
So, but you're absolutely correct. And I appreciate you sharing that because honestly, does it ever get hard to share your story? Or is it
used to. I used to share it at the high school. I would just start crying. And I was like, oh my gosh, I can't do this. Like there's an issue here. Like I need to resolve it. But I didn't until officer candidate school. I think that forced everything come up to the surface. And at that point, it's, okay, do I continue to be the victim or do I use this and use it as energy and propel me forward, right? Because shit's going to happen no matter what. It's not what happens to you that matters. It's how you choose to deal with what happens to you that matters. Because stuff's going to happen no matter what. It might not be in the same form like what I went through, right? You might lose a child. Personally, I would rather go through the abuse again than to lose a child. So everyone has their moments and in different times of their lives where they go through things. And, you know, pain is pain, regardless of what it is.
Yeah, no, I appreciate that. You've already shared a ton of advice, but I always like to give the platform advice to any of those guardsmen or folks even just listening, right, that aren't in the guard.
Yeah, for those that are not in the guard, I can see how doing something that's greater than yourself can be intimidating. And the guard can be tough, but so is everything else. Having a full-time job, going to college. Some people have a full-time job and go to college. Having a family, raising a family, it's hard. But growth lives outside of comfort. So if you find things to advance yourself, skills, knowledge, even experiences, that's just going to propel you to another level, on a personal level and in your career. And also, you know, when you cultivate, when you anchor yourself in purpose, you cultivate that inner resilience, right? And then you have a family that you can lean on, right, which is the guard for both victories and burdens. So I think it's really important to try. Don't knock it until you try it, right? Like, it does get better and you do get adjusted. And not just that, but then, you know, you adjust, you adapt to it, and then you know that you can do things that are hard because you already did it. And so you're like, okay, well, I can do that. What else can I do? Hmm. And then just for everyone in general, I would say put your ego aside and ask for help, right? Like, I didn't get to where I am at because, like, alone. I asked for help. I still ask for help. Right? Kings, presidents, top leaders, they all have advisors. They all have a group of counsel that they go to. So if they have that, we should do that too. We shouldn't live life on our own, right? We have all these resources. Why not use them? I think that's just what's going to set you apart. Like, if I expect my soldiers to come to me and ask for help, then I should be able to ask for help as well, right? It's a two-way street. Like, you have to have a balance of that give and take.
Yeah, yeah. It's fantastic. And like I said, I appreciate you coming on and sharing this. You gave so many incredible pieces of advice. I don't know if there's anything more to add to it. So appreciate you once again, Paul, for coming on and making the drive all the way from Yakima.
Absolutely.
For today. If you liked the video, give it a like. If you want to know more or have any questions, throw it in the comments. We'll definitely pass it along. Paul, you're fantastic at answering emails really
absolutely.
Quite fast, which I appreciate. Subscribe for future videos. And once again, I appreciate it.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate it.